Welcome to Season 2 of I'll Go If You Go, a Save the Redwoods League podcast. We're building community and illuminating how Californians from all walks of life think about and experience nature and conservation in the Redwoods and beyond. I'll Go If You Go, because when we explore together in community, the experience is all the more powerful. Greetings and salutations, good listeners. Today, we're going on a special voyage across space and time, over land and water, along the mighty Klamath River in Yurok Country, not only surrounded by redwoods, but in one.
When people board this, it's transformational, and in a way where everyone, I think, has this sort of connection in their DNA to being in a wooden or a handmade vessel powered by hand on the water. And it just does something special for everyone.
I'm talking about going on a Yurok Redwood Canoe Tour led by none other than Josh Norris.
Neck now, Josh Norris. I'm from the village of Waifquell, which is down here at the mouth, S.E. Hopau, which is up the river about a mile. This is my family's allotment land over here, which is now known as Flint Ridge Redwood National Park. I'm a father of four, and I love my life. I love it here on the river.
When we met up with Josh for the canoe tour, he was managing the Yurok Country Visitor Center and Redwood Yurok Canoe Tours. Since then, he's taken on a new role as the neighborhood director of the Klamath River Promise Initiative, which is a really big deal. We'll hear more from Josh about his exciting vision for the Yurok community during the canoe tour. Yurok dugout canoes, made of fallen redwood trees, have been mostly unchanged for thousands of years, and the feeling of deep connection with history was strong. A Yurok canoe tour is a fun, relaxing way to see the river and connect with nature. It's also an opportunity to learn more about Yurok culture, local history, the ecology around Redwood National and State Parks, get some great exercise paddling, and so much more. As Josh was guiding us along the river, I had so many moments of, "Whoa, that's so cool," or, "I never thought about it that way before." In the last episode, we were rolling on skateboards over land. Now, we're gliding in a dugout redwood canoe over water. We started early in the morning, so a fog still hung in the crisp air when we got to the riverbank where we were to embark. I wish I could include our entire 4-hour canoe trip, but even if I could give you a super long episode, there is nothing like actually being in a redwood canoe in the river that helped nourish its growth. To get the full experience, you'll just have to go yourself. The canoe tours are open to the public this summer, so go reserve yourself a trip when you can. In the meantime, imagine being gently rocked in a redwood trunk, accompanied by the soothing rhythmic sounds of wood against water. And since we're imagining this, maybe we get so lucky that we see one of the California condors that the Yurok tribe recently released as part of their condor restoration program. On the river, the possibilities are endless. Now that we're mentally situated, I'm very excited to share with you some of my favorite moments of learning and inspiration from the Yurok Redwood Canoe Tour.
This is Oswayatch. Oswayatch is the boat of the people. Osh is the people. So the HL sound is really common in our language. And when I'm saying things like Waifquell, the village that I'm from, so basically what you do is you put your tongue like you're going to say an L, and you just blow air through. There you got it. You got Oswayatch. And yacht is what I'd call that a yacht right there. Tip your tongue right there where you say L. And then just blow through it. Getting closer. That was it. Yeah. We call ourselves Puliklá here on the river because we're the downriver people. Yurok was actually a Karuk name for us, and they're upriver. And they call us Yuroks. And you know, when settlers came, they asked the upriver people, "Who are these people downriver?" They said, "Yuroks." And we call ourselves Puliklá, which translates to downriver. Pechklá is upriver. And then along the coast is the Nur-Ur-Nur. The language, just like the canoe culture, was basically predicted to die out in the 2000s when the last native speakers were all passing away. And that did indeed happen. But before then, a big effort was put forth to record and learn the language from these elders before they passed on. We have an entire language program under our education program, and we teach language in many of the local schools. And so, yeah, my kids, we practice language a lot. It's a tough language, and I wish there was more opportunity for them. At their school here in Klamath, we don't have a regular language class yet, but that's going to change very soon.
Yurok people have a really cool creation story about how the redwood came to be the boat of the people, but that's a story saved for telling in person.
So if you look at the Oshweotch today, each one has a nose, okay? And this is so people can find their way, right? Because the nose leads the way, and it especially leads the way to good things like good food, right? Every Oshweotch is going to have a heart, okay? That's the pulse of life. It keeps things moving, keeps things alive. And smart Osh will never get into a canoe without a heart. It's not seaworthy, it's not safe. And there's something to be said for that. I'll tell you later about structurally why that's important. Every Oshweotch has a set of lungs or breasts, depending on where you're coming from. Some say that the Oshweotch takes the female form and that those are breasts. Others say that those are the lungs. Just depends on what village you come from. Every Oshweotch has the kidneys. Those also function as footrests for the cheekwear. So the kidneys filter out all the impurities, all the bad stuff. And Yurok people, we believe that, you know, before we enter into any endeavor worth doing, we've got to be pure of heart and mind and body. So no toxins, none of that nasty stuff. So that the kidneys are very important to us. And then you have your seat, your cheekwear. Of course, everyone, after a hard day's work, needs a seat to sit on. Because if you work hard, you deserve a rest. So the cheekwear, which is the person who sits in the back, is working the hardest. Not maybe physically, but mentally, because they're steering the boat. The person that sits in the front is called the poitwasan. Poitwasan is person in the front. Poitwasan looks out for any sort of dangers along the way, sort of points the direction. And then the wagi, the people in the middle, the dancers, they're the ones that keep it going strong. One other thing I forgot. This line around the Oshweotch goes all the way around. That is the lifeline. And we incorporate the lifeline into a lot of what we do. And it's just this continual circle of life. We have those in our baby baskets as well. These things do not capsize. They don't tip over. This is a solid piece of redwood. If it split in half, it would still float, right? So it's not going to sink. And this one happens to be very sturdy. As you can tell, I don't know if you got to look at the other one. This one is much wider and flatter on the bottom, so it's much more stable. And it's also a lot heavier. We call this one the Big Baby. And this was named by the kids at the Boys and Girls Club. We took them out for a ride one day, and they kept calling it Big Baby. Why are you calling this the Big Baby? I mean, it's... it's huge. Well, it was just made last year, right? They said, so it's a baby, and it's big. Okay, good point. So it's the Big Baby. We also call it the...
Yeah, very good point.
Yeah. We also call it our SUV or our heavy duty, so... It's more of like the family style. And that one up there is, you know, for lighter travel, maybe upriver. This one is good for down here. If the waves kick up later on, if the wind gets going, it handles that all that motion really well.
So when you build the canoes, how do you know what angle to make the bottom at, or how wide to make it, or what angle to lift the arms up to? Because this feels so stable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the basic design is an ancient design. And it was developed on this river. And so that's passed down. But every carver, you know, has his own sort of technique and style. And then each canoe has a different purpose. So you design it differently for what you want. So if you want a faster, sleeker boat, easily maneuverable and all that, you can have a rounder bottom and
maybe a higher bow so you can carve into the waves and things like that. This one is more like, you know, this one is going to do your heavy lifting, your hauling. You can put all your goods in here to trade and that sort of thing. Put a deer or two in here if you go hunting, stuff like that, or gathering. So this one is not developed for speed or maneuverability. And so the dimensions on this canoe actually were passed down from... So Dave Severns is the carver, and he's working on another one very similar to this one. And his teacher was George Wilson. And George Wilson learned from Bunny Van Pelt. And so this is a design that's been passed down for several generations. The particular dimensions on this canoe. Yeah, and some have higher walls, some have lower. I've looked at some of the old pictures and the walls look really, I mean, it looks like they're paddling a board out there. So it's just, a lot of it's like personal style of the carver. Essentially, most people moved away after the 64 flood and never returned. This was, this area was, comparatively, it was booming. There was logging, there was fishing. During like the 50s through the 80s, I mean, it was kind of a heyday here because the logging was really lucrative back then. And there were mills. There were like 5 mills just in this area in Klamath. And, you know, most of them washed away in the flood and were never rebuilt. Then, of course, the economy shifted to this global economy, and now most of the raw wood is exported.
Do you think that was any kind of sign from the river to wash away the mills?
The river is in control here, that's for sure. And, you know, Yurok people have always known that. We've always been the ones who are warning people of how we're not in control, and this global change is going to be the end of us unless we put away our hubris, you know, and do something about it. You know, the river takes people every year, and so we have a tremendous amount of reverence and respect. I don't know if you heard, but recently this river was granted personhood. It has the same sort of human rights as a person would, so you can't cause any intentional harm or anything like that to it. So that's a step in the right direction, I think, you know, toward prevention of, you know, any industries that's going to harm it. So you can bring about litigation on behalf of the river, for example, if it's being harmed, which it is. I mean, the dams do it harm, obviously, and then there's a lot of agriculture upriver that dewaters it and puts toxins into it.
How is the health of the river right now?
Well, it's struggling. I mean, the drought has profound effects, and the fish are suffering. There have been fish die-offs or kills pretty regularly over the last 10 years due to the drought. It's mostly the juvenile salmon that are dying now due to the sea Shasta. I don't know the exact... I mean, it's a... What you call it? What is the sea Shasta? Some type of bacterial... infection.
Oh no.
Yeah, but they're we've had a couple of, let's say, normal years of rainfall, not heavy by any stretch of the imagination. And so the past couple of years the river has actually looked healthier. It's been clearer and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all our species are suffering. We had an okay run this year of salmon. People got salmon this year for the first time in like 5 years.
In 5 years, wow.
Yeah, we've had to close down our fisheries completely in 2 out of the 5 years. And then limited extremely for, you know, this is since 2016 or 17.
And I'm guessing this river used to be jumping with fish.
Yeah, I mean, the elders describe it. First of all, it looked a lot different than this. So this, how it's really sort of wide and slow moving, that's due to the silt that has run off from all of the logging activity, from all the roads and that sort of thing. And then the dams disrupting the natural flow of the river. So the silt has built up and it's a lot slower. But the elders would describe it as that you could walk across the river on the backs of the salmon. So you're gonna, you know, in the past you'd see a lot narrower channel right here, and then during salmon season, just moving, crawling with life. And the same was said about the eels and the sturgeon and all that. It's just, it was these, I mean, just, it's hard to imagine. And I try to imagine it all the time, as do a lot of us, what that would be like.
The Yurok Tribe is receiving $30 million from the U.S. Department of Education to work with Del Norte County Schools, community-based groups and organizations, and the local government, with the goal of improving children's education, health, and well-being. This program is one of only 7 awarded in the nation and the only one led by a tribe, and Josh is the one who's leading it.
I'll tell you what I want to be a part of. People have their different ideas. I want to be a part of a back-to-land movement that, you know, my whole family is basically involved with this. But I'm also a proponent of education, and at the current moment, it is mostly a Western education. But I'd like to see that shift more toward an ecological education, where the dream is, okay, so you have students in this Oshkosh, and they're learning about science, and they're telling stories, and they're singing songs, and they're learning art, they're carving and everything else. And the pedagogy is more like akin to how Yurok did, when the whole village was involved, you know? Elders were as much part of the education as anyone else. And kids learned with each other and basically just followed their parents all day, who were always busy doing something. So, obviously we're not going to return to a completely traditional lifestyle. Not that we would even be able to do that. But I'd like to see us move back toward more of a community education system. One where our values are lifted up. And that's, you know, reverence toward the earth and the river and everything. And dedication to restoring our fish populations and our forests and everything that provides for us. Because, I mean, deep down, that's the only thing that matters, is that we have this land to return to. And the land provides for us, and it is our duty to protect it and take care of it. And I'm committed to that, and a lot of our young people growing up here are committed to it, because they have this love for this land. And you see them out here, and it's what they want to be doing. Now, that's not, I mean, I'm always careful talking about what I want, and what I see a lot of people wanting around here isn't necessarily what everybody wants. You know, there's a lot of young people around here who want to go see the world, who want to go see what city life is all about, and explore and that. And they should have the opportunity to do that as well. if students don't realize that they can change their world, then there's not going to be change is not going to be made. So there has to be this component where they're actively fighting for what they believe in. And so that has to be a part of it. And one of the things that's coming up is like this, well, of course there's these environmental issues, the fisheries and all that. But then there's this land back effort and this decolonization effort. And that, you know, in our schools here, that sort of thing is discouraged, right? It's a very conservative, good old boys type of network here. And
do you mean here in the city or in this country in general?
It's concentrated here. I mean, it's like our number one industry besides the hospital and parks here is the prison. You know, our maximum state prison.
Jeez.
And it used to be logging and fishing, of course. So our kids grow up, you know, with these parents, second or third generation, removed from when we were flourishing with that stuff, right? And they still have those values, though, that you know, this, we can make lots of money off the resources here. It's just these liberal politicians holding us back, and they need to free up the land and the parks so that we can, you know, that's still there, and people still really believe that, you know, the only reason that we're not thriving off that stuff is because of all these regulations. We need to educate our kids. Hey, look, you know, you're not going to be able to survive the same way your parents and grandparents did. It's got to be something different, you know. And so now we're looking at things like ecotourism, right? Mm-hmm. And basically a ecology economy, where it's now we're preserving and protecting rather than taking. But there's still a cultural revolution to be had here in this county to make that happen.
And that's what you're hoping to do with this next position?
That's right.
Join us for the first ever California State Parks Week from June 14th through the 18th, 2022. Through special community events and in-person and virtual programming, California State Parks, Save the Redwoods League, Parks California, and the California State Parks Foundation invite everyone across California to celebrate the lands that have been protected by and for all of us. Visit caparksweek.org to learn more and find local events.
We're going really well right now because the river's flowing down and the tide's going out. But if we get too carried away, it's going to be a challenge getting back. But I feel like I have some strong support up front there. This is going really well.
Dana's a surfer.
Oh, yeah. I was like, you know what to do with the paddle. Got it. So I'm going to head across and go into the slough just because it's kind of neat.
So when you're out here on the canoe by yourself, do you have a practice or, like, what do you like to do?
Oh, wow. Okay. What I do when I'm by myself, it's really meditative for me. This is how I meditate, basically. When all you're hearing is, if you get away from the highway, all you're hearing is the, just a little bit of splash with the paddle and the birds. That's pretty much it. What ends up happening is songs come to me. So Yurok people, songs are passed along and handed down, but we also learn songs by listening to nature. And I'm a singer in our ceremonies, and I pick up a lot of songs just being out here. And then there's a rhythm and a cadence to what you're doing, so it's just it just sort of naturally occurs.
With summer just around the corner, I can't wait to get back up to Yurok country for another rejuvenating adventure on the Klamath River. And I'm hoping to get lucky and see a lamprey or salmon next time. To make sure you can get a spot on a Yurok canoe tour this summer, head on over to visityurokcountry.com/canoes. We'll include a link in the show notes. Tours are available Wednesday through Sunday as early as 8 a.m. and as late as 2 p.m. from 2 to 4 hours long. Wherever you are listening to this podcast right now, we'd like to send you off with Josh's song, For a Safe Journey.
Hey, yeah, yeah.